Essentially, all you're doing is feeling your feelings. So this is science. Dr. Sarno, in Michael Galinsky's film, All the Rage, said, "My methods are more scientific than surgery." This is simple science. If your brain and your nervous system are being triggered into fight or flight, into an overreaction with cortisol to protect you from the predator of your repressed feelings, if that's being triggered, you're going to get pain because the pain protects you from feeling the feelings because it gives you something to focus on. That is science. That's what's going on in your body. So the more you feel your feelings and excavate them, the less pain signals are going to be sent. So that's just plain and simple a cause and effect situation.
This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. It is Wednesday, October the 10th. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I come to you live from my car, which is probably some of the background noise that you're hearing because the heat is blasting because it got real cold here in the Pacific Northwest up here in the Seattle area. I'm about 20 miles north of Seattle. Before I kicked off this podcast, I wanted to remind you that the number one way that you can support the show is to go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and leave a review, write a review, a five-star review. It's really the best way for this podcast to get more exposure. It really helps push me as a labor of love that this show is. It ultimately helps people find this podcast to use it in their healing journey and their healing discoveries, things like that. So that's the absolute number one thing that you can do to support this show. Today, of course, we have part two of my Q&A session with Nicole Sachs. Part one aired last week. Got a lot of great feedback from people that listened in on that particular podcast. So it went really, really well. So before we go into that, I just want to do a little short little story. You can probably hear from me this nasal issue that I'm having right now. And so basically, this is a great example of, so I've talked before on this show about like a beaker, and Nicole has talked about that, a beaker. Dr. Sarno talked about a beaker or a steam valve, basically, of health. And so essentially, when you get physical symptoms, it's sort of this underlying emotional repression that's happened, that it's sort of knocking on the door and saying, hey, pay attention to me. But also, one of the things that happens is that if you have an issue, I've known people that have had, they go and they take like pain pills for back pain, or they take a variety of different things for whatever. They go and they have surgery. I have a great example actually of this. So had shoulder surgery, right? The shoulder heals and then the sciatica starts and the knee pain starts and then those things go away and then the back starts hurting and the neck starts hurting. So really just you're essentially exchanging one symptom for another. It's called the symptom imperative. Where basically, again, like you can get rid of one thing, but then ultimately something else is going to come up. So last week, I think it was on Thursday, my back had just really been bugging me. It was, and I had a pretty tough workout like the day before, or the day of, or whenever it was that it was. And I just made the mistake, and I literally, it was 30 seconds. I go and I roll on this lacrosse ball where my back was hurting for 30 seconds. I didn't even roll, actually. I just sort of stood there. And almost like an emptying tube of toothpaste, it was like the pain in my back sort of went away. And within an hour, I suddenly started having symptoms like allergy, asthma, cold-like symptoms. And some people will just say, oh, that's just BS, and you just caught a cold, things like that. I mean, really, like, the timing of it is really pretty crazy. And it was, men get colds, we're total wimps about it, things like that. But in my heart of hearts, I certainly believe that if I did not lay down on that lacrosse ball, that I would not have these nasally symptoms that I'm having. And as my symptoms go away and I start feeling better from a sick perspective, my back starts tightening up a little bit. And so really, like, what that ultimately tells me is that I'm repressing something. I need to give it a little bit more thought. It reminds me of, I've been off, like, allergy and asthma medicine for 2 months now. It would be more like 3 months, but I took a one-day break. Basically, I was going out on a date with my wife in mid-August, and I wanted to make sure that I didn't feel allergic at all during the date. So I took the prescription medicine that I had been on for years, for 6.5 years. You know, of course, I don't have any nasal or allergy problems during the date, but my back starts to really, really bug me during this date. And, you know, it's just really interesting. You can get rid of one symptom or try and treat one symptom, and ultimately something else is going to pop up. And that's really what TMS is. And you know, that's why it's so important to go to root causes, and why, you know, less and less of my confidence level in doctors, unfortunately, and chiropractors and physical therapists and all this sort of dwindles when it's a chronic issue. Really, it's so much symptom treating that if there's not a psychological component to that that's being used and really addressing an underlying cause, you're going to get the same symptom popping up, or you're going to get something else popping up, which I think is just unfortunate, right? It's just the way that it is. So this week coming up again, part two with Nicole Sachs. I've got some really awesome interviews coming up soon. I recorded with Adam Heller from Zero Pain Now. That's going to air in a couple of weeks. I've got a couple of chronic pain survivor. I don't know if that's the right term. Chronic pain overtaker stories that are going to be coming up here in the next couple of weeks. One from my very favorite story, which is this guy named Jeremy, who I just love everything about his story. It's my all-time favorite. Ali Damron is going to be on the show here pretty soon. And I'm interviewing Dr. Margaret Chan this Thursday night. And we're going to be talking a lot about childhood trauma. I think is going to be sort of the bulk of the show. But she was a referring psychotherapist for Dr. Sarno as well while he was still alive and still practicing. So short open today. We're going to spend the next 45 or 50 minutes or so with Nicole Sachs. So here you go. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. This is a continuation of last week's episode where Nicole Sachs, LCSW, who's on the line again. Hello, Nicole.
Hi, Eddie.
We were running through questions that were on the Facebook page, and we're just going to blast right back in to some of these questions. So this is from Rita. So she said, "Hey, TMSers, know that journaling is one tool of many to release repressed emotions. What if someone that has released a lot of emotional baggage already through therapy prior to getting physical symptoms in my body? In my case, my career change brought on physical symptoms. Could I still be a candidate for TMS despite feeling like there's no emotions from the past left to heal?" Okay, so that's a question to unpack. But basically, I think she's saying that she thinks that maybe she has released all of the repressed emotions and there's nothing left to do. I mean, I'm assuming that you have clients in the past that you've talked to that feel like, look, I've dug as deep as I can. There's nothing there. What do I do?
So this is Rita?
Yes.
Oh, Rita, my friend, come on now. None of us have unpacked everything. and also, as Dr. Sarno always said, the unconscious is literally unconscious because we're not aware of it. So we might think we've unpacked a lot, but one thing that has been a beautiful gift for me, having started the Facebook page, which is called Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs LCSW, if anyone is listening and has not yet joined, just to let you know, it's a closed group. So the only people who see the interactions there are the people that I have approved to be in the group. So it's not something that will be on your Facebook feed for all your friends and family to read. Just having said that, one of the most beautiful things I have gotten from being presiding over this Facebook page for the past however many months is people telling me the exact opposite of what that question just said, which is, oh my goodness, I cannot believe where Journal Speak has taken me. I thought that I was totally resolved over my mother's death, and I found myself weeping like a child, you know, putting my arms out to be held by her. I felt so much pain, you know, in the following days and weeks, released from my body. I really needed that. And that's the beautiful gift, that there is always, life is an onion. I know it's an old cliche, but you know, you are an onion and more layers get peeled and more to be revealed. And if indeed, Rita, you are suffering from TMS, it certainly means that there are things in there that, you know, you probably, the voice that's telling you that you've looked at everything you need to look at is TMS. The voice itself is protecting you. It's saying, no, we're not going to go there. We'd rather have a headache. We'd rather have a backache. We'd rather have an elbow problem, a foot problem. You know, that's easier. Because all TMS is the nervous system perceiving your physical pain as a less threatening predator than your feelings. And so it will do anything it can to protect you and save you from revealing those feelings. So I say always, always more to be revealed. It's a lifelong process and it's a beautiful thing if you can embrace it as such.
Clear something up for me. I see this get asked quite a bit, or people talking about it in forums and such. I think a lot of people, a lot of times, like try and look for like the precipitating event or the mm-hmm. precipitating emotion. Does that exist, or is it like, I mean, if you say that you were to be journalist and then whatever it was that you, like Sarno has an example of a woman who was sexually abused and mm-hmm. He says like, this is kind of the exception to the rule. Can you just comment a little bit on, is somebody likely to unearth one thing that suddenly all their pain will be released and that's going to be it?
Well, you know, I'll use myself as an example. First of all, the short answer to that is it's everything's so personal, right? Everybody's experience is so personal to them that indeed there are times where people feel that there's one factor that is the most salient, maybe not everything, but that one really, really created a huge enlightenment in them to know how they felt about something. I think, at least personally, more accurately, it was one realization that led to a huge unpacking of many things that led to that, and the realization was, of course, if anyone has read my book, I talk about this in great detail, that I hated being a parent. And the reason that that realization was so enormous for me and led to an 80% cessation of back pain the next morning, and that is true. That is a capital T true thing that happened to me, which is I was struggling. I was journaling. I was learning to journal speak. It was being born in me, this journal speak concept. And I wrote at the top of the page. So the topic was motherhood. And I wrote, I'm tired. And I have two babies under the age of two. And, you know, I have two cribs and I have two diapers and like all the things I was saying. And I had this moment of realization that I'm lying. I'm not lying. Like all that stuff is true, but that's not the deeper truth I need to get to. And I wrote on the page, I hate being a mother. And it was so awful to look at because, and this goes into the cascading effect of one realization, I had been planning on being a mom since I was 10 years old. I couldn't wait. And I had a subconscious certainty that I discovered after I learned journal speak that my beautiful babies, who were yet not conceived at that time, were going to fix my life. We're going to mend my heart. We're going to take away all the pain of my childhood because I was going to do it right this time. And understanding that crisis of conscience, that I was sitting there just like you, Eddie, with two young children, and the reality of that, and realizing I freaking hated it. And that meaning, so basically, if you really look at what that means, if you're going to delve down into that little 5-year-old inside of me that we mentioned in the last episode, that was like, you're hopeless. These kids were supposed to fix your life. You're dead. Nobody's coming to help you. Nobody's coming to save you. You thought this was going to fix you. You're dead wrong. And now you're screwed. And that was a terrifying moment. But, and this is the most important thing, it only lasted for a moment. And I said, wait a second. Do I hate being a mother? And it was like, I can feel it now. I can feel my whole body tingle as I say this to you. It opened me up like a flower. Like I had been a flower that was closed so tight that nobody could get in. And that realization, saying that truth out loud, that ugly, dirty, nasty truth, I hate this, opened me up and I could see all sides. I could see that little girl in me that was just sad and scared and needing to be cared for. And I could see that I did not hate being a mother, that it was hard. And then it was challenging, but oh my God, when I wasn't looking at it to save my soul, I was like, I love this. I love my beautiful babies. I can see them for who they are, not just a function of me. And so I tell the story in great detail in the book, but the truth is it opened me up to love so much more and to love what is, rather than the misconception of what my subconscious was labeling parenthood. And that 80% of my back pain went away from that realization. But it was multi-layered, and I went on ad nauseum still to this day in continuing to nurture and to be curious about all the layers of that and how I grew up and seeing that little girl that was me and finding compassion for her and taking her with me.
You know, it's fascinating that you say it in the way that you do, because I like in that the opening of the flower, because there was a moment like 3 weeks ago where I was I was having some back troubles again. Like they were just not like in a, you know, they were more acute, like they felt more acute, but it wasn't because of anything that I did. I wasn't, nothing had happened. And I, you know, I'm just trying, like, I'm like, okay, like, what is it? What is it? What is it? What is it? And I'm kind of walking around and I'm holding my back and I'm just wondering, like, what is it? And I had this moment where I saw my youngest daughter, Audrey, who's not the one that threw the thing out of the car. Audrey's 8 months old, but had this moment where I kind of looked at her and I started thinking about it, like, you know, God, dadhood is like, it's like really, really hard. And I have a great wife. And like, why is this so hard? And I kept sort of ruminating on it. And it was kind of amazing, like within an hour or so, like the amount of, once I kind of thought a lot of these bad things about, like, you know, dadhood is not all it's cracked up to be. I had a moment where it was like I had this intense love for both of my kids, mm-hmm. where it's kind of like being able to remove that part of you and accept it and sort of eradicate it and then feel completely different. It was a really, really hard. There was a guy, a listener from Dallas, who messaged me and we talked last week, and I was telling him about this particular moment. I'm like, I don't know how to explain it to you, man, but it was like I kind of had this really super dark moment, and then suddenly it was like the lightest that I had felt, like the most love I had felt in a long, long, long time.
I mean, absolutely. And this is what happens every single time we do our, so what you did was journal speak. You know, journal speak isn't only writing in a journal. It's a way to think. It's a way to talk to yourself. It's a way to talk to yourself in the car when you're alone or in the shower. I say, you know, people, some people have trouble with their hands, like their TMS has caused them to be arthritic or whatever, and they can't hold a pen or type easily. And I say, get into your car when you need to go on a long drive and you just start talking, say it out loud. You know, I hate this. And that's important also for people to understand that when I said I hate being a mother, that was not me. That was my five-year-old. That was that little voice inside of me that needed to be heard, because a five-year-old doesn't care about polite society and about, oh, well, of course, but being a mother can be hard. No, they're like, I freaking hate this right now. I hate it and I want to go home. You know, that's how a five-year-old feels. And that's the voice that needs to be heard, because that is happening in your system and it's just being expressed through your pain.
You know, a lot of times on Sundays before the family gets out of bed, I'll get up and I'll go driving, and usually I'll drive like 45, 50 minutes. And I'm literally just kind of driving up and down the highway. Like, I'm not really going anywhere. I might stop at Starbucks on the way home. But I half the time will be listening to podcast, and then the other half will be basically journal speak while I'm driving. I have those moments where it's like I just, this music is either very, very faint or it's just silence, but that's exactly what I'm doing, is what you're describing. So it's a great segue, what we've been talking about for the last 5 minutes, because Sonia, who I shouldn't pick favorites, but I really, really love every time that Sonia contributes on the page, but she said, how do you handle the guilt of uncovering these dark thoughts in journal speak? For example, Nicole had the realization that being a mother wasn't all that it entails causes underlying rage. The guilt that goes with the realization that I could think think such things about motherhood will not go away. So how do you handle the guilt of that?
Okay, well, I think the most important thing to realize is, and this is an example I give often in my practice and in my book. So if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there to hear it, does it still make a sound? And I'm saying, in the world of TMS and chronic pain recovery, yes, it makes a sound every time it falls, even if you're unwilling to pay attention, even if not, you're not looking and listening. And so if you have these very natural human feelings about parenthood, which, by the way, every single person has, and you don't want to look at it because of feelings of guilt and shame over you, you know, what I say, people shooting all over themselves, what you should be, what you should feel, what you should act on. If you're having those feelings, because everyone does, and you're not looking at it, you're going to feel pain. You're going to feel it somewhere. So, okay, life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse. It's going to hurt to feel these things. It's going to make you feel bad. It's going to make you feel like you're a bad person, because society has told us that parenthood is joy and we're, you know, having the next generation and it should be all like, you know, fresh baked cookies and, you know, how was your day? It's not always like that. And everybody knows that. And so I think the guilt needs to be tempered by absolute human love and compassion and kindness and forgiveness for ourselves. Everybody feels this way. I can promise you this, Sonia, and everybody else who is reading this or listening to this, or, you know, reads the Facebook page or has a child. Nobody is immune to feeling frustrated and feeling sort of decapitated by raising kids. Like, what used to be ours is no longer ours. And so it is just such a natural feeling that the guilt needs to be tempered by saying, well, I have two choices. Either I don't feel this at all, and that tree falls in the forest anyway, and I'm going to feel it as physical pain in my body, or I'm going to be brave. I'm going to say the awful things. I'm going to say I hate this right now, and I wish I could get in my car and drive away and never come back, and that's how I feel, and I want my mommy. I want somebody to save me from this. And say it. Let yourself feel it without shame, because we're just all feeling it anyway, and then getting a cessation of symptoms, and then what happens? You're more available to those, you know, beautiful, horrible people. You're more available to them. You can, you know, and that is what grows you. And so getting stuck on the guilt is a disservice to your mind, body health, and to the health of your relationship with your children. So I say, acknowledge it. Yeah, this makes me feel bad. Do it anyway. Come through the other side of that dark tunnel into the light. Realize what it's given to you, what's given to your health, what it's given to your relationship with your family. And realize sometimes life isn't a choice between what hurts and what's awesome. Life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse. So it's still going to hurt to have to do this, but it hurts worse to live in chronic pain.
What about, so as we record this, I was having some thoughts and just kind of feeling like sort of overwhelmed with life and, you know, again, like two kids and a wife and a job that sometimes I don't like as much as I probably should, because you literally just talked about that. You know,
you don't like it as much as you'd like to like it.
Correct. Yes, that's perfect. I don't know if I doubt anybody from that company is listening to this anyway. So whatever. But anyway, a frustrating thought that I was having, and I you know, probably should have gone down on paper or maybe stayed in my head, but I expressed it and I said it to my wife, which ended up not going over so hot, right? And I feel bad about saying what it was that I said, like the feelings that I was having, but only because I don't think that it was particularly fair. It's just like, you know, that's just what I'm feeling, and
it's journal speak. Journal speak doesn't have to be fair, and it doesn't stay true.
But it doesn't have to be said out loud. I guess that's what my thing is like, you know, the whole idea is putting it down on paper and shredding, like you've talked mm-hmm. about, maybe showing it to your therapist, but probably shredding it, burning it, whatever, because having other people see is not really conducive to it. And maybe the mistake that I made was, you know, sharing it out loud when like a lot of the stuff that we feel isn't necessarily fair, but it's there. Mm-hmm. But it can hurt other people, you know, if they were to hear about it or see it. But that's a peek into something personal that happened recently, I suppose.
Okay, but since you brought it up, I'll speak to it briefly, which is, you know, Eddie, just forgive yourself. You know, we don't always have complete control over our impulses, our need to be heard, our need to be connected with, our need to be understood. So, you know, maybe you learn that next time that hurt a little more than you'd like it to share that with your wife. And so you do take it to your journal. Everybody feels like they're overwrought sometimes, and it, you know, and sometimes we do take it too far and we share it with a person that doesn't deserve it, but just forgive yourself. You know, staying on that glue pad is not helpful to you.
Yeah. This is from Sarah, who's another, I guess I have a lot of favorites. Sarah's another one of my favorites, but, so she said, whenever my 6-year-old watches me suffering in pain, she feels very sad. So as a mom, how should I react in that situation? Should I tell her it's okay and be strong, or should I ask her about her feelings? I don't want to sow the seeds of some childhood trauma in her at this age by observing me like that. So I think this is a wonderful question, because for I remember my 4-year-old asking me for a while after I found Sarno's book, like, Dad, is your back? Because I used to complain about my back a lot, and she would ask me about it. And I guess talk about that. If you're having your kids observe you in pain.
I think that it opens. So let's just call a spade a spade. It's not fun. It's not fun to have to suffer in front of anyone, much less your beautiful, impressionable child. So we'll just bring acknowledgement to the fact that, Sarah, that's really hard. And I get that. And I think the best thing I can say is it's a really beautiful opportunity for a teachable moment with your child. Because when we raise our kids, we're not just raising them to, you know, give them food and shelter and make sure that they, you know, can live another day. We're raising them to prepare them for the challenges that their own life will present. And so I'll give you a personal example. So I took my now 10-year-old daughter, you know, within the past year, so recently enough, to the mall, and we were shopping for stuff she needed for camp. And the mall, for whatever reason, is a really bad trigger for me physically. I think it's because I've spent so much of my life having a very poor body image, which is ridiculous, but whatever. It's just we've got our jam, right? So that was mine, which is I always thought I was too fat. I always thought I was not pretty enough. And, you know, it was like, that's that thing. That's the reason we have eating disorders, because you pick something you can control. And my upbringing was very out of control for me. And so that was one thing I could control, which is like, you know, how much I ate and what my body looked like. And it always came up short, because that's what human being does. We judge ourselves. And so being in a mall where like you're seeing yourself reflected in every store window and every mirror, and everything is about how can you buy something to make you look a certain way, it's just a real subconscious trigger for me. So I'm walking through the mall with my daughter, and as we're walking through, my hip is starting to bother me. And my hip, I find that I've become really well acquainted with my body. And so there, I have different pains that are different triggers for different feelings. And so my hip was starting to bother me, and it was getting worse and worse. And I was like walking around this mall, feeling all these feelings that I didn't have time to pick apart and figure out what it was. It was just a generalized feeling. And finally, it got to the point where I was like, really, like, not that I couldn't walk, but I mean, it was bad. And I looked at her and I go, I need to sit down for a minute. And she said, okay. She said, are you okay? And I said, yeah, my hip is really bothering me. Can we just sit down for a minute? And she said, okay. And she said, what's wrong? And I said, honey, you know, I don't actually know exactly what's wrong, but I know that I'm feeling a lot of things right now. I didn't get into, you know, she doesn't need to know my personal issues. Like, that's not to me for a child to know. But I said, you know, I'm having a lot of feelings. I'm feeling a little like stressed out, you know, just being here for whatever reason, because kids need permission to feel their feelings as well. And I said, I just need to rest for a minute. Maybe this is a good time to stop for lunch, you know, just like take a break. And she was like, okay. You know, and what I feel like she learned in that day is, and we did, and we stopped walking around and we did stop for lunch. And afterward, the pain had left me. You know, I had been honest with myself and with my child. I'd taken a break. I'd cared for myself, and it went away. And I guess the thing is that I will say from that is I know that she saw me hurting. I saw in her eyes that she was concerned. And maybe this isn't an extreme example, but it's still an example to be referenced, which is she saw that it's okay to take care of yourself. And it's okay to say, I'm having a lot of feelings, and I'm feeling it in my body right now. And by the way, it's not easy for me to do that, because my kids see me as the guru of this stuff. Yep. I mean, they know that this is my job. They know that this is what I do every time I go into session. And so it was humbling for me to say, it's affecting me today, the stuff that I help people with. I'm having a lot of feelings, and I'm feeling it in my body right now. And I know my daughter gained something from that experience. And so what I will say to Sarah and to anyone who's struggling in front of their kids, tell your kids what's happening. Say, sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies, and mommy is feeling a lot of pain in my body right now. I have a lot of feelings, and sometimes it's not possible to feel all our feelings in one sitting, you know, but I'm okay. I'm going to be all right. I got a plan. I know what I need to do. It's not going to happen overnight, but I'm going to be okay. And I'm here for you, and I love you. And that's really all a kid needs to hear.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. I think, you know, the kids observation thing is tough when you're a parent, because probably partially maybe of what got you into the situation you're in is trying to be a certain way, right? Like
totally,
being
yeah.
so rigid and stuff like that, that really it's just sort of opening up and changing that a bit. This comes from Mary. So she says, does Nicole think with journal speak and meditation is enough to get rid of physical pain or bad symptoms such as burning mouth syndrome?
Yes. Oh my God, the burning mouth. I have such an interesting story about burning mouth. So I got burning mouth. Okay, let me answer her question first. Yes. Daily, consistent, patient and kind journal speak practice. I like to add 10 minutes of meditation. So my prescription for people is 20 minutes of journal speak. Of course, you have to learn what journal speak is and understand how to do it properly. But 20 minutes of journal speak followed by 10 minutes of meditation. It's a half hour of your day. Consistently. will get rid of any symptom you have. It may not happen overnight. And if you are interested in it happening sooner, the more you do, the better. The reason I prescribe 20 minutes with 10 is because I don't want to overwhelm people. I don't want to say you have to sit and do this for an hour or hour and a half a day. Dr. Sarno, when he originally gave out his instructions for healing, he was saying an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening. I think that people are put off by that. So I've condensed it down to like a smaller, and I think I found from experiments that that's a workable amount of time that can lead to healing, but people are always invited to do it more. But essentially all you're doing is feeling your feelings. So this is science. Dr. Sarno in Michael Galinsky's film, All the Rage, said, "My methods are more scientific than surgery." This is simple science. If your brain and your nervous system are being triggered into fight or flight, into an overreaction with cortisol to protect you from the predator of your repressed feelings, if that's being triggered, you're going to get pain because the pain protects you from feeling the feelings because it gives you something to focus on. That is science. That's what's going on in your body. So the more you feel your feelings and excavate them, the less pain signals are going to be sent. So that's just plain and simple a cause and effect situation. Having said that, I believe that you can heal. And in terms of the burning mouth, I got burning mouth for the first time about a year ago. I had never had it before. I never had heard of it before. I went to my doctor. I made a doctor's appointment and I said, am I dying? Am I going to have a stroke? Because they say like you taste pennies before you have a stroke or something. Yeah. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that. So I'm like, I literally said to her, my whole mouth feels like it's on fire. My tongue is burning. My gums are burning. I actually had it so badly that the whole roof of my mouth peeled off, like as if we had like a hot piece of pizza. Like I had such a physical reaction. I had a burning mouth, and my doctor said the most beautiful thing that a doctor could ever say to a person like me, which is, "Oh my goodness, I have another patient who has this, and she's been to Johns Hopkins, she's been to the Mayo Clinic, she's traveled the country, and you know what they keep telling her?" And I said, "What?" And they said, "They keep telling her it could be involved with stress. Isn't that crazy?" And I go, "Thank you, gotta go, bye, here's your copay." I as soon as I heard that this, I wasn't dying, and I didn't need a blood, actually even I had a blood panel done just for shits and giggles to make sure, you know, I'm totally fine. I put my laser in the direction of that burning mouth. I journaled. I took care of myself, and it is absolutely, completely, totally gone. I haven't felt a tinge of it in months and months. And one thing that people need to understand is once you get a symptom really bad, your body will play with you with that symptom. Like after the burning mouth went away for the most part, let's say 2 or 3 weeks later, I'd have a particularly stressful conversation with one of my kids or a hard day at work or, you know, whatever. I would get like a little tinge, like my tongue would go whoop, you know, like a little burn. And I would say, "Ah, I hear you. Okay, I got it. All right, let me take to the journal. Let me take a minute for myself." But like, that's how it happens with all symptoms. And then they just go.
Yeah.
They don't get any energy anymore.
Cool. Okay, so... What about, this is another question from Mary. I think this is a good one as well. So soothing our pain with ice or Tylenol, is that bad? Even though you know it's not going to cure you, just to make you comfortable for a while, giving you a break during the day.
Oh, that is an excellent question because that lets me talk about that there are two forces of energy in the universe, love and fear. There are only two. And I invite you, as you're listening to this, to do the experiment on yourself and to touch into everything that motivates you in your entire life. And if you are honest and if you break it down, you're either motivated by love or you're motivated by fear. And the same exact situation can be motivated by love and or fear and look, the same exact situation can look totally different. So what I will say to that question is, if you are going to put ice on your body and that ice is motivated by fear, it goes like this. This is what your internal dialogue is going to say. All right, I have a pain in my, you know, shoulder. Okay, all right, I have a pain in my shoulder. It's really bad. It's scaring me. oh my God, am I going to be able to go and do that thing with my son that I promised to do? I've already committed to it. Oh, but it involves lifting things, you know, and I don't know. Okay. The pain is short. Okay. Let me get the ice. I'm going to get the ice. I got to ice it. Okay. That's fear. Here's the exact same scenario motivated by love. I feel the pain in my shoulder. Oh man. All right. I got a lot going on right now. Obviously, you know, I've been letting my journaling practice lapse, or I have been journaling, but I know that there's like more to get to, or I haven't been prioritizing myself enough. I obviously haven't been treating myself with love and kindness. Okay. I'm feeling it. I'm getting that shoulder thing I get. You know, it's freezing up and it's hurting me. What can I do that's kind and loving for myself right now? I know I'm going to be fine. I'm obviously, it's going to go away. It's all right. Let me get that ice. Let me put on some Netflix. Let me get myself a hot cup of tea and put that ice on my shoulder. Let me treat myself with a little love. No one's been loving me lately. I've been taking care of those stupid kids. My husband, my wife is bothering me. My boss just gave me an earful today. You know, F him. I don't want to deal with his shit. You know, let yourself be the first priority. I'm going to put some ice on that shoulder and take the load off. Totally same situation, completely different thought processes, completely different result.
Yeah, that's a lot better actually than I thought you were going to say. I thought you were just going to say yes, because Sarna would talk about prescribing a painkiller sometimes to be able to get you to do the emotional work. So I love that distinction. Okay, so Rachel, she is from Australia. I know that because she messaged me. That's the third Australian in this thread. I told you there's something down there. It's one of my favorite places in the world, so it's good. But okay, so Rachel says, with the journal speak, you have the list of your personality. I'm not exactly sure what is meant to be spoken about in this list. Do I write about how I feel like I will never heal because I'm not intelligent enough to grasp this concept of TMS, and that I will fail and won't follow through with it? All this stuff becomes quite depressing. So am I meant to write about these types of feelings?
Yes, definitely. And the personality list is interesting because people look at trauma from childhood and they look at the exhaustion of day-to-day life and they think that the personality is like kind of the least inflamed of the three. And honestly, the personality list is the most pervasive because your personality informs absolutely everything you do. And so if you are fearful that you aren't smart enough, I mean, I never actually heard that one specifically. And Rachel, dude, you are smart enough, girl. But anyway, if you are fearful that you are not smart enough, that is not just coming into this TMS question. This is probably pervasive. This is probably every situation you enter in. You say, am I enough? Am I smart enough? Am I good enough to even be here? Should I even be invited? It's like the whole imposter syndrome. So the reason that personality needs to be looked at and needs to be looked at as a fellow panelist when I used to work with Dr. Sarno at NYU, a fellow panelist used to say, I believe his name was Mark, he used to say, you need to go into your darkest room and turn on the light. And that always stayed with me, because if your personality is leading you to color so many of your interactions based on how you perceive yourself or how you need to be perceived, that is a very important thing to look at. So yes, I would put on the top of my journal speak page that day, I'm not smart enough, I'm not good enough, and I'm worthless. And just start writing, because it's not true about you. But that little kid inside of you thinks it is. And you need to give her that voice. You need to let her scream it out. You need to let her be heard. And when she's done, I promise you the conclusion you will get to is, I'm all right, you know that? Look at all these things I can do. I'm a parent, I'm a wife, I work, I'm smart enough. But you can't just say that until you let that journal speak out, until you let that little kid have the tantrum, because somewhere inside she thinks she's not smart enough.
You know, one thing you didn't say there, and I feel like this is also a common mix-up, is the little girl doesn't think she's smart enough. You had never said, need to uncover why you think that. Is the why not that important?
Well, I think the why, like anything else, is kind of like that tree that grows from the initial box. So let's say the initial box is, I'm not smart enough. And now we're going to put those lines down. One of those lines is, my dad always called me stupid. And I believed him. And even when I rebelled against him and I was desperate for his approval, there was still part of me that believed him. And I need to get to that. I need to listen to that little girl. And I need to then, so now I could draw another line from that into another box, which is, My father didn't feel good about himself. If I look back on my childhood, I can see that he was always doubting himself. Maybe he didn't think he was smart enough, right? So the why becomes important, but we follow the feeling and we let the feeling guide us into what we need to look at.
Rita and Jane both asked follow-ups to this. They wanted to know if you could provide some examples of things that would go into the personality column. Rita especially commented, daily stressors column takes over 90% of my list. and then Jane essentially asked the same question. She'd love some examples of the personality column.
So the personality column will be shorter than the daily life and the childhood column in terms of content. But like I said, it's equally, if not more important, because the, you know, 5 to 10 things that you put on it will color most of the things that you do in the daily life and did in the childhood portion. So for me, I think it was like, and remember, when you make your lists, they just need to be bulleted. They don't have to make sense to anybody but you, and they can just be a concept that will remind you what you need to talk about. And so oftentimes, you kind of go through your personality list once, but then when you're dealing with a lot of other things, that personality will come into it. So just for a concrete example, for me, I'm perfectionistic. I'm goodist, which is, I don't know if Sarno coined that phrase, but it's something used a lot in Sarno literature, which is I want to be seen and I want to see myself as a good person. It's very important to me that people think that I have good intentions, that I have that I'm out for their greatest good, that I'm nice, that I'm kind, that I'm loving. Like if somebody thinks that I'm underhanded, oh my God, Eddie, it kills me. Like it's so important for me to be thought of as good. So if I have like a miscommunication with someone and they think that I meant to harm them, that will eat me alive. So that's personality trait, goodest. People pleaser. I want people to be happy. I am super codependent. So codependent, like I had an alcoholic father who was never happy, but if he wasn't happy, he made my life miserable. So I'm very codependent, which is I need other people to be okay for me to be okay. And if they're not, I feel a tremendous amount of anxiety. That's a personality trait. You could say I'm an anxious person. I'm a vigilant person. So really it's about kind of taking a breath and realizing there's no right or wrong way to do this and say, what am I like? It could change, by the way, over time, but you know, what am I like? And those answers will rise to the surface for you. For me, perfectionist, goodist, people pleaser, codependent, vigilant. I'm always watching the landscape, you know, who's going to hurt me? What's going to pop up behind door number, whatever, that's going to challenge me. I'm looking at it. Over the years, I've learned not to stress about it, but I still look. So yeah. It's that kind of stuff.
I mean, for me, like you had given the example earlier, for me, it's like honesty is a big part of it. So if somebody thinks that I did something dishonest or that I'm being dishonest about something, like I will fight to the death to prove that not only am I not being dishonest, but I am the most honest person ever, which is a catch-22 because like when people are being dishonest or I think they're being dishonest, essentially I'm on a vigilant witch hunt to prove that they're dishonest, right? Like it just becomes, and I would love to be able to let that trait go, but it's just an,
okay. What I would gather from that is I would put on my list, I'm self-righteous. Now, self-righteous sounds like a negative thing, but it's a journal speak list. So what you would want to look at in that, not to psychoanalyze you, Eddie, but you open the door. what I would want to look at is, why am I so self-righteous? Why is it so important that I am the honest, upstanding guy? And that will bring you back into patterns from childhood, ways you've been affected by situations, what it means for you to be seen as honest, what it means for someone else to deceive you. You know, it's good stuff, man. It gets into the meat of what you are, into the nuts and bolts of what created you. And then what you do is you find your way into such compassion, because at the end of the line, it's always, oh my goodness, of course I'm self-righteous. Who wouldn't be when their dad did this or their mom did this or that bully in third grade did that? And, you know, I felt like my saving grace was that I was an honest guy. Like, you know, you come to such self-love because you understand why you are the way you are.
Yeah, you know, one of my older brothers, I've got three brothers, and the one that's older than me, not oldest, but older, you know, when I was a kid, he stole a lot. He lied a lot. He did a lot of drugs. He drank a lot. Fought with my parents, you know, like pulled knives, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I haven't been drunk in 7 years. I've never even touched a cigarette. I've never done a drug. And like, so I can unpack fairly easy probably why those things would be, right? To, I don't know. It's interesting stuff, right? When you start pulling back the layers and thinking, okay, like, because my parent, you know, I didn't, my parents were great, and we still have a great relationship to this day. But I would bet that a lot of it is rooted in that's the observation of my brother and my parents' relationship, which was pretty tumultuous. So,
which also brings, which brings to bear probably the most important human need, second to human connection, which is safety. So, you, what made you safe, right? Your brother was bad. What made you feel safe being a good guy? And that's what I think often comes to us when we're doing our journal speak is, oh my goodness, I needed that to be safe. Well, of course I'm like that. And it just brings forgiveness.
We've got about five more minutes, and this is actually the last question. So in two episodes, we did them all. And there's, this is it's a three-parter, and it's from Sarah. Actually, it's a four-parter, and it's from Sarah. So maybe we'll do a little bit shorter form answers to make sure we get through all four, because I think they're all, I think they're all very good.
Maybe it's the speed. It's a speed round. Yeah. So.
tell us. So she says, tell us some amazing stories of recovery from unusual conditions. Maybe we'll start with tell us an amazing story of a recovery from an unusual condition, not just the usual back and neck pain.
Okay. I will just quickly tell you that I had a client who I write about often. Her name is not Olivia, but I call her Olivia, who had such severe head and facial pain that she was hospitalized nationally and internationally for a year. She had to defer her entrance into veterinary school. And through doing the TMS work, after being so severely poked and prodded, she had, her hair was falling out, she was emaciated, and she was on suicide watch on her mother's couch in Chicago. Through Dr. Strax, who is one of my dear colleagues, referred into my practice, I worked with her. That was, I met her in April. By September, she was pain-free. She did 4 years in vet school. She did her internship in Colorado, and now she just began a three-year emergency residency. She's going to be one of the top vets in the country, saving all your animals pain-free.
That's awesome. I just heard from Dr. Strax 20 minutes ago, so it's funny that you bring him up. Okay, so what do you do when you followed all the advice, journaled yourself silly, and you still haven't seen a change?
Be patient, my love. Be patient. How old are you? Are you older than eight? You know, have you lived a life? We are a take a pill society. We are a give away our power society. We are, I'm going to go to sleep for 5 hours and let a surgeon cut away my pain society. It does not work. It never will. You take time. You do a practice consistently. You open yourself to the beauty of yourself and the forgiveness and the love that can come from being honest with just you. Nobody else needs to see. You will see results. Keep on keeping on.
This is a crossover to an earlier question, but what do you do when you write out those deep, dark thoughts, but instead of lifting away after writing them down, they stick around and give you an added layer of guilt? For example, Nicole gives the example of one part of her hating all that motherhood required of her, yet after expressed, those feelings floated away. What about when they don't and you end up feeling worse?
Then you have to continue. So you've got a little kid inside. She's just a sweet baby and she is you, and she's feeling really sad, and you've listened to her talk for 20 minutes and she's still crying. What do? You sit with her patiently. You give her what was not given to her by the people who are supposed to take care of her. You sit with her and you say, you know what, babe, I'm going to be back tomorrow and I hear you and I'm just going to listen to you and I'm just going to be patient with you because this might take us a little while for you to feel better. And I know that you and I both know as parents, Eddie, that it's very inconvenient when our kids don't just snap out of it. As parents, we just want everything to be well, and we do the same thing to ourselves. So really, patience and kindness is the key.
Can you recover from TMS in a high-stress environment in the presence of unremovable problems?
Yes, yes, yes. I used to sit on the panel, and that was our greatest hits question, which is, I know my, you know, people raise their hand. I know my TMS is about my work. I hate my boss, but I cannot quit this job 100%, at least for, you know, however long. And I, you know, I don't want to be in pain anymore. Remember, let's go back to the science. your body is reacting to feelings because they cannot be expressed because you refuse to let them rise, because that's what repression is. And journal speak is the vehicle with which they rise. And so you have to feel it somewhere. And if you cannot allow yourself to feel it, you're going to feel it in your body. Once you feel how much you hate your boss, once you feel how much you're trapped in your job, once you feel how much you loathe every minute of your day, and you know I'm journal speaking here, so I'm getting super dark. Once you feel that, once you really openly let yourself feel that, you still might hate that job. I would actually postulate that you might hate it less, but you'll still hate that job maybe, but you won't have back pain when you go in. You won't have headaches when you go in. You'll be fully aligned with yourself. You'll know exactly how much you hate it. Maybe you'll make plans to leave one day. Maybe you won't. Maybe it will transform because you came to alignment and acceptance. But feeling the feelings is the only thing you need to eliminate the pain. Situations need not change.
Well, that does it. I know you've got something coming up here. So I guess let's take maybe the last two or three minutes. Tell us all the places that we can find you, anything that you want to plug. Thanks so much for doing this. By the way, by the end of this, it's three total episodes that we've done together. And I would love to not totally regularly, but you know, maybe like once every few months do a Q&A like this. I bet people are really going to get a lot out of it.
First of all, it's my pleasure. I love talking to you, Eddie, and I love hearing people's questions. And it's just such a pleasure to have a platform on which to share things widely, because when I write back to people's Facebook posts, sometimes it just gets lost in the sauce. So this is really great to have. So anytime. And, if you would like to find me, the best and easiest way is just go to my website, which is thecureforchronicpain.com. And if you Google either my name, which is Nicole Sachs, or The Cure for Chronic Pain, you will find it. And on my website, there are links to my online course, which is called Freedom from Chronic Pain, which many people on my Facebook page can attest has totally changed the game for them. Then, of course, there is the Facebook page, which is a closed group. It's called Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs, LCSW. If you search that in Facebook, it will come up. Click the link to request membership in it. I will approve you, and then you can join the discussion there. I have a YouTube channel, lots of completely free information. It's called The Cure for Chronic Pain with Nicole Sachs, LCSW. Search it on YouTube, and you will find it. Subscribe, please, and join our community. So much free information being exchanged. I have success stories up there. I have people's testimonials as well as all of my musings. Lots of footage of my beautiful standard poodle named Blue Dog. it heals you just to look at his beautiful face. I have a book. It's called The Meaning of Truth. A lot of the stuff that Eddie and I discussed today is detailed in very explicit detail in my book. Sometimes more than you want to hear about me, but you know, it's always done with love. It's called The Meaning of Truth. It's available on Amazon.com and I believe other sites, but I know Amazon is the easiest way to get it. Please review it. If you are here and listening to this and you have read and loved my book, like you have written me so many emails about, please go on Amazon and take 5 minutes to review it, because reviews are what gets books up on the Amazon suggested offerings list. And I am, you know, so passionate about sharing this knowledge and availing it to people who have no idea it's out there. And so that would be wonderful if you could do that. And the crowning jewel in the last 6 months of my life, which is I will be leading a 5-day amazing total transformation Omega retreat at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. Look up the Omega Institute. It will blow your doors off, and the people around the world that come and speak there. It's a tremendous honor to be invited. And the week is going to be called From Chronic Pain to Celebrating Life. And it is not just going to be the nuts and bolts of getting better. It's going to be the nuts and bolts and getting better, but it's also going to be how to elevate your life to a really magical place to live. And I really look forward to sharing that with people.
Awesome. Kudos to her, to Nicole's book, because I the first time I read it in one day. Like I would sit and I'd read it for a couple hours, and then I'd take a break, and then I would read it again for another hour. And it's a quick book to get through. So yeah, and it takes less than 5 minutes, right? I know you said 5 minutes. That's being generous for most people. Probably 2.5 to 3 minutes. So yeah. Take some time and do it. Nicole, this has been great. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Eddie.